Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast. This is number 197, recording on Thursday, the 29th of December, 2011. We've decided you couldn't go three whole weeks without an All About Symbian podcast. So Rafe Blandford's here with me.
Hello, everybody. Yes, I'm afraid it's just Steve and I this week. But as he said, we thought we'd squeeze in one extra podcast this year.
Yeah, quite a few bits to talk about, actually, for a quiet Christmas week. We've got all sorts of things to discuss and news stories. I guess top of the bill, Rafe, has to be the announcement today of the Nokia 801T, which is essentially a new hardware design in terms of curves, and it's a unibody steel chassis, but with essentially most of the internals of the Nokia X7. It's designed for the Chinese market, so that's TD-SCDMA, if I've got that right, the Chinese version of 3G. It's got an LCD screen rather than OLED, which I guess is a major difference. It certainly looks a lot more conventional than the X7, but probably aimed at much the same market, plus a little antenna, Rafe. What do you think?
Yes, I think that's right. It's interesting that Nokia continuing to knock these out. There's been quite a few of these TD-SDMA handsets over the years, and actually it's one of the sort of bright spots for Symbian, really, in that Nokia has done quite well in this market, as you might guess by the fact these handsets have continued to roll out. And yes, I think this is quite an interesting design. Of course, neither of us have seen it in person, but it looks like it's been pretty well put together. And I kind of wonder whether this is one of the designs that didn't make it and maybe fell by the wayside with the move to Windows Phone. Although I suspect it's probably a unique design for the Chinese market. That did happen with some of the other handsets, although they tend to, you know, use bits from other handsets. I remember one that was sort of a cross between the N8 and the C7 almost. But yes, this one actually has quite a lot going for it in terms of the specification. I think people will look at the camera and go, oh, that's only EDOF, but it is the 8 megapixel variant, so I suspect this is one of the better EDOF cameras. But the aerial that you're referring to, Steve, is actually for TV, sort of specifically for the Chinese market. So it's kind of these mobile TV handsets, which have never really taken off in Europe, but are actually much bigger out in Asia, particularly in the Japanese market. I suspect the same is sort of happening in China.
But with 801T, it kind of sounds like there should be an 800 beneath it for the world larger worldwide market, as there was, you know, with the previous models. The T kind of, and adding a digit, is kind of the way they approach their Chinese model numbering. So I think we'll expect perhaps a Nokia 800 for Europe and the USA, probably at Mobile World Congress.
Well, it's possible that we'll see another handset from Symbian. Certainly there's been enough talk about it, and kind of from a logical point of view, it makes sense. I will say that, you know, looking at some of the previous model names for these Chinese handsets, they have tended to not always tie in with the, you know, conventional Nokia naming scheme. I mean, previously they've had things like the 6788, and then there's the X5 TDS, and those didn't really bear any relation to sort of model numbers near them. Nonetheless, you know, it kind of does make you wonder about this sort of thing simply because it's a high-end TD-SDMA, get that abbreviation right. Yeah. And Nokia described it as such, you know, this is intended to be one of the top-of-the-line TD-SDMA handsets. And so, you know, you've got to wonder, yeah, there's room for, if you like, as you say, a world variant. I suspect it would probably get called something like the 705 or something like that, and they'll preserve the sort of the 800 range for the Windows Phone handsets, but I may be wrong, and I do expect if that does come out, we'll hear about it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, the camera you said is EDOF, and it's probably the same one as in the 701. People may remember I wrote a piece on this. It's kind of EDOF generation 2. Although the hardware is the same, there's significantly better EDOF processing, which means you can focus closer and get far better photos. So let's hope the 801T inherits this better camera.
Yes, indeed. And actually, if you think about, you know, what they've done in terms of this camera, they did something similar with the previous TD-SDMA handset, which was the 702T. That was the kind of handset that looked like the Nokia E6, and similarly the T7-00, which was the one that looked like the N8. You know, that had the 8 megapixel EDOF cameras on both of those, not the sort of autofocus units that we've seen elsewhere. And actually that sort of reinforces what I was saying just a moment ago about the naming of these handsets. But there was something else that sort of caught my eye, really, about these handsets. And this was the fact that, you know, outside of those specifications, actually this is pretty complete because it's got things like NFC. So it's kind of the latest of all the hardware family, if you like. It's got all the bits and pieces that you've come to expect from a Symbian phone, which from a pure technology standpoint, you know, ignoring kind of the big numbers in terms of processor speeds and RAM, actually it's, you know, very capable in terms of all the sensors on board, the GPS, the utility of Bluetooth, and all those other connection mechanisms. And, you know, the fact that this is a TDM, SDMA handset, you know, a lot of the smartphone manufacturers have kind of ignored this. There have been handsets from others, you know, for this Chinese 3G, as it's called, but not in terms of the mainstream products, you know, not typically things. Of course, there's no iPhone version or no top-end Android handset. So, you know, it should do pretty well because it will be regarded as one of the best smartphones you can buy on this Chinese 3G network. There are some Android handsets available, but I think it's probably fair to say they're not in quite the same, you know, they're not the high-end ones, at least, not in quite the same way as you might expect from, you know, the Nexus handsets or maybe the Galaxy range.
Yeah. Now, the 701, which we looked at fairly recently for the wider world market, was notable by, although it was very high-end in terms of its specifications and certainly in terms of its sort of size stroke performance, but it did feature an LCD display with clear black display rather than OLED. Now, here we see the 801 also with LCD rather than OLED. Is this a move away by Nokia from OLED for power-saving reasons? I mean, OLED was introduced saying this is the great new power-saving display technology, but in actual fact, given that most of the stuff these phones display is white, it's actually a power-draining technology. So do you think this is a deliberate decision to go to LCD?
I don't know. I suspect there's probably more complex reasons for it. I would imagine it's a combination of how good the screen looks, because, you know, that's obviously an important factor, but also the cost. And one thing I will say about the 701, it is a very bright screen, and you get the same thing in the Nokia 603. So there's a lot to be said for these screens. You know, they look absolutely fantastic indoors in just terms of the light. They don't have the same clarity of blacks, but a lot of that is offset by the fact it does have the clear black display, which is, so as we've commented before, the rearrangement really of the screen matrix, so that you get I guess the way to say it is you get the polarizing layers becoming more effective. So I would say it's a combination of cost, but also making sure the screen looks good in as many conditions as possible. And it may be a power efficiency about it. I suspect there may also be sort of the availability of components. If we think about some of the things that have happened in the last year, you know, particularly floods in Thailand, but also other factories having problems out in Asia, there are a few component shortages. And Nokia have actually commented on this in some of their kind of quarterly results. So it wouldn't entirely surprise me if there's sort of supply issues going on here as well, or at least that's a contributing factor.
Yeah. Now, in the intervening weeks since our last podcast, Rafe, we have sent back the 701 back to you. So you've now got a Symbian Belle and also this display technology we've just been talking about. In your mulled wine-sodden hands, how have you found the 701 so far?
Well, I've been enjoying using a 701, and actually I think one of the most interesting stories to relate really is something I think could have an impact on a lot of people saying, what device do I get? Do I, you know, stick with my Symbian handset? Do I move to something else that Nokia is doing with Windows Phone, be that the 800 or something else to come? I've actually been carrying both handsets around, something I typically do, you know, partly because I'm keeping an eye on both Symbian and Windows Phone world. But they had very different use cases in one sense over Christmas. I will say the Windows Phone one, you know, for things like email and arguably for web browsing, was kind of my default device. It's partly probably because I've been using that as a main device for a while. And the 701 is actually more capable in some ways than the E6 I've been using because of the screen size. It's sort of a different, you know, user experience using that kind of touchscreen device rather than the QWERTY touch, if you like. But the Lumia 800 battery is disappointing compared to any of the Symbian handsets. And, you know, as typical at Christmas time, you'd have been out visiting relatives or going out to parties. You know, I think at Christmas time, everyone has a period where they're away from the house for periods of time, often overnight and things like that. and keeping the Lumia charged is a challenge at times, because, you know, you have to remember to bring a charge or charge it in the car. And it's not necessarily the opportunity to charge it, it's remembering to do so. And I guess I'd get better with that over time. But the nice thing about the 701 is basically it was able to do two on one occasion, even onto the third day, without me having to recharge it. And, you know, over Christmas, I'm maybe not using it quite as much, but having said that, I'm using it to keep an eye on the site in terms of all the servers still working, check what limited email I might be getting, and there's certainly lots of Christmas text messages going back and forth. And, you know, when you're traveling somewhere, you've got, you know, 15 minutes downtime, time for some games. So actually it's probably had fairly intensive use. So I think if you're the sort of person that, you know, isn't necessarily able to charge their handset easily during your kind of your day, whether that's, you know, working day or your leisure time, then the Symbian handset may remain your favorite simply because it's able to keep going where other smartphones give up because their battery runs out. And I don't think Windows Phone is any worse than Android or the iOS or iPhone in that respect. I mean, I think they're probably all on a par. Maybe the Windows Phone devices are slightly better than the Android handsets, I'd say. It depends when you look at battery capacity and all of that. But certainly, on the whole, I'd say you'll get double the battery life out of a Symbian device in terms of the equivalent capacities and all of that kind of comparison. So it's been quite an interesting metric for me, because most of the time, of course, I'm sitting at the desk, and when I'm going up to London, it tends to be for an 8-hour period, in which case, you know, you'll never really have a problem as long as the battery is fully charged before you go. But this Christmas period sort of has brought home to me that power consumption difference. And aside from all of that, the 701 running bell, you know, is the latest version of Symbian. It does feel a lot slicker than some of the old versions. As an old-time user, it's taken me a while to get used to it, if I'm honest. You know, I keep expecting things to work in the old way. So I take a look at it, ooh, that doesn't look like a Symbian handset. But it has simplified things down, and I think the best example I can give of this is, you know, handing over the handset to someone else saying, oh, I need to make a phone call. You know, previously there might be times when you need to say, oh, you do it that way, and they've just been able to pick it up and use it without any instruction whatsoever. And, you know, they come back and find them playing games and things like that, and that's kind of a contrast to before, which I think speaks well to kind of the simplification that's happened with Bell, and maybe ease of use has been improved.
Yeah. And on the subject of a power drain, you were talking there, and in terms of Symbian being relatively efficient, I did post an editorial on the site a couple of days ago, as you listened to this. It's entitled "The Biggest Power Drain of All, Cleverer Software Needed," referring to the fact that when you're in a very weak 3G area, the phones, as we all know, they spend an inordinate amount of power just trying to cling on to that 3G signal, when they should think, okay, it's really weak, let's switch down to GSM and save 90% of the power and give you far better battery life. I went to an N8 battery in 3 hours, which is just ridiculous. This is a smartphone, and as I said in the editorial, the software should notice itself that it's having real problems and it should switch down automatically. Have you ever seen this, Rafe, and what are your thoughts?
Yes, I've definitely seen this. I think this is something you see a lot if you live in a rural area. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily just about the 3G either. It can also be when you're going in and out of signal altogether, because obviously what the phone has to do is, if it hasn't got a signal, it will then have to check periodically for getting a signal. And I think that's more power intensive than if it's just holding on to an existing signal. And it applies for both 2G and 3G, this. But yes, in particular, 3G is bad. And I guess with the rise of 3G, it has kind of got worse, because there's an extra dimension to it. And, you know, anything that requires sort of renegotiation of the cellular connection in some form is going to be more power intensive. And so, of course, when you're in the city, it's very rarely a problem, because you're just handing over for one 3G cell to another. And I think people don't notice it, but it is something I notice. I think the phenomenon that people will probably most commonly come across is when they're driving along a motorway or on a train, and that can often be, it's not only is it passing between 3G cells or cells in general pretty quickly, it often will go through spotty patches, and you'll get this problem, which is why, you know, you can be on a long train journey or a long car journey and your battery life will go down significantly without you even kind of realizing that you're doing anything. So yes, I think it's a definite problem, and, you know, different platforms take different approaches to this. You know, there is some intelligence built into some of the platforms, including Symbian. It doesn't always seem to be terribly bright, I have to say. I've observed this, I think, on all the platforms. BlackBerry is one of the ones that seems to deal with it a bit better. I mean, I think that's probably to do with the fact that it does so much of that kind of always-on connection, and has done for a while, and going back to before the age of 3G. The iPhone is okay on this, but I'd say it's sort of on a par with Symbian, and Android seems to be the worst culprit. I haven't tried it or looked into this on the some more recent releases. This is going back to kind of the 2.0 Android era. But yeah, it's a big problem, actually. And so I think Steve, in his editorial, sort of is calling for more intelligence. There's also the option, of course, of, you know, setting the network mode to just be GSM or 3G. That's a bit of a faff, to be honest. And, you know, for power users, fine. And, you know, there are applications on both Symbian and Windows Phone, and I'm sure it applies to the others as well, where you can actually switch between 2G and 3G just at the press of a shortcut. And if, you know, this is something that happens to you regularly, I'd obviously recommend you look into those applications. But really, it's something that should be happening, as Steve quite rightly points out, at the platform level. And there are plenty of other, you know, battery-draining situations beyond the network stuff we're talking about here, where you wish the phone would just be a little bit more intelligent. You know, the same thing can actually apply to Wi-Fi, where you're sort of in and out of a Wi-Fi hotspot. And actually, this can be a bit of a problem in urban areas. So, for example, if you're BT open zone configured on the phone, you can actually have the problem that your phone will keep trying to connect to a BT open zone hotspot but not get a proper connection for authentication or for some other reason, and will actually stop using 3G data, and therefore the data connection will stop working. That can be pretty frustrating, quite apart from some of the power implications of, you know, hopping on and off some of these networks can be pretty battery draining as well. So more intelligence all round, really.
Yeah, I should make a note that, of course, a very easy way of going from 3G to forced 2G, and also numerous other optimizations, including reducing the display brightness, is to just press the power button very briefly on any Symbian phone and just choose power saving mode, which does a number of things that really have a dramatic effect. Several times, Rafe, I've been down to one bar or so, and it's forced going into power saving mode, and I've lasted another 3 or 4 hours. So it really is a dramatic cocktail of settings. And the only downside really is that the display brightness is way down, so that if you're, you know, we're planning to play a game in those last couple of hours, then you might be disappointed. But yeah, power saving is a good tip, Rafe, isn't
it? Yes, I would definitely recommend this. That is kind of the default thing. Of course, you can put the phone into offline mode altogether, which is kind of no point in carrying a phone, I suppose. Yep. But if you know you're going to need it and don't want to switch it off altogether, that battery saving thing actually works quite a lot on other handsets as well. But really, that's just a tale of how much modern smartphones are actually dependent on kind of a 3G connection of some sort or another, be that for email or some other kind of push for IM or whatever. And typically what those battery saving modes are is shut down all of those data connections, and, as you know, Steve says, switch off Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, dims the screen. And if you think about that, actually, yes, you can get a long time out of it. I've actually had a handset where I've put it into kind of power saving mode right from the initial charge, and you can get really quite astounding battery lifetimes if you do that sort of thing. Of course, the smartphone in one sense becomes less useful, but if you know you're going to be away from a wall charger for a significant period of time, it's actually an option that's worth considering. Yes, it changes from kind of being a push device to something, you know, it's, if you like, a pull device. You have to specifically go and grab information. But that, for me at least, is a small price to pay. And I know I've done that when I've been traveling, forgot the charger, and sort of been able to get 4 or 5 days battery life out of a device.
On to another subject. Symbian has, of course, been declared dead more times than, well, Houdini probably. And the week or so ago, during the Christmas period, December the 21st, Nokia announced that Symbian Bell would henceforth be called Nokia Bell. And people said, well, this is it. It's the death of the Symbian name. But that's not quite true, is it, Rafe?
No, this is, I think, people sort of jumping on a bandwagon. It's not really true. I mean, and saying that Nokia announced this is really a bit of an exaggeration anyway. This was from a post on Nokia Conversations where they mentioned in passing that Symbian Bell was being renamed Nokia Bell, and people immediately assumed that meant the Symbian name was being dropped altogether. That's not really the case at all. This is a specific reference to the user interface, and the operating system will be continued to refer to as Symbian. Nokia actually say we reached out to a spokesman to get some extra information. It's really just a case of clarifying the existing situation. I suppose you could look at it and say, well, maybe they're doing this because the Symbian brand isn't very well known, and maybe it's been even a bit damaged by some of the events that have happened in the last few years. But I think it's probably more down to the fact that the Nokia name is better recognised. So when you say Nokia Bell, people know where that's coming from, where Symbian Bell, maybe less so. And in one sense, as one of our commenters pointed out, it's really a return to the situation we had before, where it was Nokia S65th edition, Nokia 63rd edition, and Symbian was barely mentioned at all. So I think, you know, the idea that somehow Symbian's being deviously killed off by Nokia isn't really the case at all. I think this is, you know, a case of semantics more than anything else, and it's the marketing people have got onto this and decided what's the way we can do this that will be most clear to the average consumer. So, you know, there's been a fair number of blog posts saying, you know, Nokia's, you know, kicking Symbian while it's down. Honestly, I think that's rather an over-exaggeration. And it seems a sensible move to me, although I can't really see that it will make an enormous difference, to be quite honest. People are still going to refer to them as Symbian handsets, and I suspect most people will refer to it just as Bell rather than saying Nokia Bell or Symbian Bell. I know when we've been talking about it in the podcast, we've tended just to refer to it as Bell and just refer to it as Anna in the case of the previous update, and I'm sure we'll do the same for subsequent updates to come later in 2012.
Yeah, we were all a bit disappointed, Rafe, but at the end of December when Nokia announced a clearer timescale for when Bell would be issued as an update for existing Symbian 3 and Symbian Anna phones. I had to spot online, though, that they have announced that Bell is actually shipping with many new N8s and C7s, etc., that are coming off production line. And also I noted that the Bell firmwares are appearing in Navifirm online, which is used by the service centres, so that presumably if someone takes, for example, an N8 into a service centre for repair, there's every chance it might actually come back with Bell. Not to promise that, but it's possible, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, it's now on Navifirm, which generally has a 3 or 4 week lead time, so that actually puts us at the February timeline for some of these firmware updates. It seems about right, especially if you consider the Christmas break might delay things. But yes, my understanding is that N8s and C7 and C601s coming out the factory now equipped with Bell. They will obviously take a few weeks before they get into shops, simply because of kind of the lead time for distribution, and they'll sell the existing stocks first. But it's all pointing very much towards a kind of a mid-February launch on the these handsets for Bell, which kind of makes sense with MWC coming up. I imagine Nokia would want to get that out of the way first, and then they can make any announcements they want to at MWC without that kind of hanging over them. And yes, I'm always a little bit disappointed when this PR speak comes out about, you know, it's now imminent. It's not really delayed. I mean, the reality is it was meant to arrive in 2011. It didn't, and it is very disappointing when that kind of thing happens. But I don't really think it makes it that big deal of a difference. You know, your handset doesn't suddenly become less usable because it's got a software update slightly later than was originally intended. I know some people want the latest thing as soon as possible, but as I've said before, I always think it's important to focus on performance and stability and make sure it's delivered properly rather than having it as soon as possible. It's always a compromise on those things, but it does seem it's well and truly on the way now.
Yeah, a lot of the extra functionality we've had throughout 2011 has been from application improvements. And personally, if you, I was given the choice of you can have Symbian Bell now for your N8, Steve, or you can have a brand new version of Nokia Social, you know, fully written in native Symbian, or fully written, rewritten in Qt, and it's 10 times faster, I think I'd probably go for the social update.
Yes, I think I'd go for the social update too. And actually talking about, although it's not an official Nokia Social application or update, there is one application that's come out recently that really has caught my eye, and I suspect it's caught yours, judging by your review of it. And that's Fascinate, which is a kind of a third-party Facebook client, but it's all written in QML, and it's been very, very well designed. And I think it's probably the easiest to use of the Facebook third-party clients, and it's the thought that's gone into the design and how you do things in the application that really stands out for me.
Yeah, and all this is just version 1.0, which is quite amazing. The other competitors, and I ranked all three of these at the same percentage rating of 90%. They're all really rather fabulous. FMobi, there's Facial, and there's a Fascinate, all as good as each other. But the other two have gone through about 20 different versions to get there. Fascinate's hit it out of the park on the first go, so I just can't wait to see what happens with version 2.
Yes, I'd agree with that. And I think Fascinate also seems to hang together in a slightly more cohesive way. I think that probably reflects the fact the others have gone through so many updates. It does sometimes feel that they sort of had functionality added on, where something like Fascinate in particular, you know, it's clearly been designed very carefully in that first version, so it feels pretty consistent all the way through its use case. There are some bits that are slightly jarring, but that tends to be the fault of Facebook in terms of the way things are implemented, and there's only one way to actually achieve them through a third party client, you know, generally dropping into the web browser or something like that. But I was, you know, I've been playing with this on the 701 over Christmas, and I've been very impressed. I mean, the others are, as you say, you know, very capable clients, but if there was just one I was going to install, I think it probably would be Fascinate for me, and particularly for novice users who are maybe less willing to put up with sort of the occasional glitch. Well, not glitch or so much as inconsistency in an application. So I think high praise for Fascinate, but also a lot of that comes from the fact it's used the QML or the Qt Quick components. So it feels consistent. It feels like a native application much of the time, almost more so than Nokia Social, I'd say, particularly if you're running it on a Bell handset where, you know, it matches the look and feel of what's already there. So yeah, a definite thumbs up from me for Fascinate.
Yeah, the only weak points are currently with Fascinate are that it doesn't handle Facebook email, Facebook messages very well. You have to, the workaround is to reply to a message by writing on the user's wall, which doesn't really seem very satisfactory, but I'm sure they'll sort that out in an update or a new version. Also noted, it's free, unlike the other two programs mentioned, although they were only a pound. This is free and ad-supported. I think I'd rather have a £1 version, Rafe, with no ads, because it's not very much money, and I think it's certainly worth it.
Yes, well, hopefully we'll feed that back to the developers and maybe they'll make a commercial one available that's ad-free, because yes, I think I'd agree with that. I'm more willing to pay for an application. It's interesting using applications from other platforms where I think ad-supported applications are a lot more common than they are on Symbian. And it is quite a frustration because I would rather just get rid of the ads altogether, and most of the time paying even a couple of pounds for that seems to be a no-brainer for me, because you get back some of your very precious screen real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. One final item before we finish. Nokia's QML store, which has been in beta for a couple of months now, has been graduated, if you like, to become the next generation Nokia store client, i.e. the version we've all been playing with from beta has now been rolled out, and people just with generic devices out there in the world are being offered this over the air. So it's version 3.20.50. Phew. Is now offered over the air. I think it's a great step forward, Rafe, that the Obvi store really is really rather slick now and fairly fast scrolling. And it's shown up as being so, because if you now go back, and this is a good test if you're out there, if you've got a 5800 or an X6 in my case, an older S65th edition device, just boot up the Obvi store on that. Yes, you'll probably get an update. But the version you get offered there is so far it's almost archaic compared to what we're now being offered on Symbian 3 with this new QML store, Rafe.
I think that's absolutely right. It's interesting how these small iterated updates have happened in the last year, and it's kind of Anna and Bell, but also all tied into that is, of course, Qt and the QML components, have actually made an enormous difference to the performance of applications and services on the phone, and kind of, in one sense, Nokia Store is the best example of this. But they haven't really been that much remarked upon or noticed, even by us, because they have happened kind of gradually, and, you know, maybe it's a new handset that's come out to do it. And people have sort of said, oh, you know, Symbian hasn't had that many changes. You know, and yes, there's been some stuff with Anna, and Bell obviously makes some very obvious visual changes. But actually, these performance changes are really quite significant. I think it's another great advert for, you know, the QML way of doing things, this Nokia store, but also all credit to the Nokia development teams involved in doing this. It feels really slick now, and that performance thing does make a difference, because obviously, you know, if it's easy to download applications, if it's a pleasant user experience, or I guess the word that Nokia and other manufacturers like to use, if it delights you, then you're more likely to come back and download more applications, which can only be good for the platform and its developers. So yes, thumbs up from me as well. And certainly I think it kind of fills in one of the last missing blocks for me on Obvi Store. There are still some in-app billing, things like that, too. That's available in beta. But in terms of the availability of things like SMS billing or on-phone billing in some countries, then this sort of performance thing, the ability to re-download applications, you know, the ability to, you know, download without having to register, which has also literally just been introduced for some of the Symbian 3 handsets. It's been available on Series 40 for a while now. Plus, you know, a web version and all that. Compared to when Obvi Store launched, the amazing amount of progress has been made. And in particular, as you say, comparing it on the X6 5800 or even going back to one of the S63rd edition handsets, this feels really slick and really powerful. So for people going, you know, the App Store experience on Symbian isn't very good, it's certainly not down to the client or the service itself. You can maybe make a point about the catalogue, or even then I think there's quite a lot of applications that are sort of more than 50,000 available now. And yes, you know, it's really right up there. So, you know, it's nice to see it get to that point. It's just, you know, I guess there's part of me that goes, it's sad that I suspect most people won't fully appreciate this because they've already written it off. But that's, I think, a cry that we will hear a lot about Symbian in 2012. People won't necessarily fully appreciate what it's capable of.
Yes.
And I have a feeling I'm going to be saying that more and more in the podcast in the next next 12 months.
Yeah. One little disclaimer, whatever Rafe mentions of your store, he does, of course, mean the Nokia store.
It's been renamed, Rafe. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. Going back to the older devices with the older Ovi store, it is quite primitive. And things like gravity, if you restrict yourself to just specific items of software, hand-picked, something like a Nokia X6 or 5800 can really be still a pretty good experience, even today. But it's when you fall back to the built-in web browser there and the speed of that on that platform and certainly the speed of the Ovi store, the Nokia store client, that it really becomes obvious. And I've really been enjoying things like the N8 and C7 and even the E6 over the last few months. And I've tried to go back. I love to pull devices out of my cupboard and just try older devices just to get a feel for how good or bad they still are in the present day. And it is quite painful sometimes. Going back to S63rd edition with quarter VGA. Yes, I know I can make it incredibly powerful. And I've featured it many times in my pimping series. But I'm sorry, it's just so painful. And I use these devices just eyeing up the NHD devices in the corner of the room, and I have to go back. People say that NHD isn't very high resolution, Rafe, compared to, you know, WVGA on the Android non-Windows phone, but NHD is absolutely fine for me. 640 by 360, it's great for videos, great for games, and it's great on a 3.5-inch screen.
Yes, no, I agree with that. I mean, the high-resolution screens are always nicer, but the difference between something like the N86 and then the 5800 or any of the current of the Symbian 3 handset is really noticeable, and that was a big one for me. I try and get onto the older handsets at time as well, because I think what people fail to appreciate is that, you know, the typical person will often own a smartphone for 2 years and sometimes even longer. I still get emails regularly from people who are still using an N95 or on something like an E61. And we try and, you know, cover information of interest for them as well on the website. Clearly, we're always going to be, you know, biased towards looking at the more recent stuff. But, you know, there is a good reason that we keep looking at that older stuff. And, I mean, I'm the same. I have various older devices sitting on here. I actually have the E61 that I was testing something on the other day after I got a question about it. And the 5800 is still sitting in the corner of my desk. I suspect it hasn't been switched on for a couple of weeks now, so the battery's probably dead. But nonetheless, I think it's important to remember, you know, that there are a lot of existing devices out there using the older software. So, you know, people have sometimes emailed and asked why are we sort of featuring these older handsets. Well, that's really the reason for it, and we're going to continue to do that into 2012 as well.
Yeah, one final bit of, almost news, if you like. Certainly if you're in the UK, I noticed that Amazon are currently selling the N8 for just under £200 SIM-free and the E7 for £250 SIM-free. So some of this, quote, older hardware from late 2010 is now going to be updated to Symbian Bell and, you know, more usable than ever with some pretty unique selling points and at an absolute bargain price. So do go bargain shopping with your New Year's money or your Christmas money. I think it's well worth it.
That's right. And those are also available from Carphone Warehouse for the same price. And you can actually walk onto the high street in the UK and go and buy one of those for that price. And I think particularly the E7 and the N8 are kind of the standout ones in some way of the Symbian 3 handsets, because I think they both offer features in terms of the hardware form factor and the camera in the case of the N8 that you can't really find elsewhere. And particularly if you're happy to use Symbian, those make really great devices. And I suppose as phone geeks, we all have multiple devices, and I don't think anyone should be ashamed to have either of those devices in their pockets and used on a regular basis, even if they perhaps have another handset that they also, you know, use day to day.
Yeah, I'm going to carry on recommending things like the N8 and C7 and E7, especially with the update to Bell. And I'll carry on recommending them right up to the point where NFC starts to become a must-have. At the moment, NFC is a really nice future-looking technology that I'm enjoying playing with, but it is just that, playing with. At some point, maybe mid-2012, maybe beyond that, NFC will start to become a must-have spec point. And at that point, maybe these older handsets become slightly less attractive. But at the moment, yeah, highly recommended from me.
But we will say, if you're listening to this, Nokia, and you're thinking about whether to release a last Symbian flagship, be it the Nokia 801 or whatever you want to call it, please do so, because we still want to see it. And yes, we expect to see NFC and everything else in it, and maybe updated camera, because I think there's a lot of market demand for that particular type of handset from all the Symbian users who are out there, and for those who aren't yet in the Windows phone markets. And that's a handset I would really like to see in 2012. So if I was going to have one wish granted for 2012 from a Symbian point of view, that would definitely be it.
Yeah, seconded from me. All about Symbian expects, Nokia. so that's a goodbye from me. Any last words from you, Rafe?
Well, I guess we should say Happy New Year to everyone. I think this podcast will be going out on the 30th of December. So hopefully by the time you're listening to this, it might just still be 2011. But if it's not, we'll still say Happy New Year for 2012 from all of the All About Symbian team.
Yes, of course, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at AAS. You know the main site, of course, allaboutsymbian.com. I'm Steve Litchfield, and it's goodbye and Happy New Year from me as well. And we'll be back with the full team next week in the All About Symbian Insight podcast.